This podcast is part of the Zio to Hero Podcast Network.
AvenuePodcast.net.
Hello, all my beautiful people. It's time for another fun episode of If You Give a Dad a Podcast. And I want to say thank you to all the people who are here listening to this right now. Whether this be your first time listening, or if you're a longtime listener, I'm glad you're here to hear this episode today. I am really stoked about this. This is another one that I met at ArtCon. I've had a couple of those guys on here now. I've had Colin Bunn. I've had Buster Moody on here. And now I have Kevin Nellen on here with me. He has done all kinds of really cool stuff. He was the art director for Hitmonkey. He was also the storyboard artist and the storyboard director for some of the seasons for Archer and for Vampire Diaries and Black Lightning, a bunch of other CW shows. He's done a little bit of everything. We get to talk about music today and all kinds of other fun stuff. I believe you guys are really going to enjoy this episode. I'm really proud of this one. It was a very nice conversation that me and him had, and I can't wait to bring him back on. And for those of you who are here just to listen to the Kevin Nellen episode, welcome. I hope you enjoy what you hear, and I hope that you stick around and listen to some of the other great episodes I have here as well. So, if you guys are as excited as I am, then let's get this show on the road.
If you give a dad a podcast.
You're bloody welcome.
You know.
Hey, Dad.
If I get my hand stuck in a pickle jar, I'm straight up bull in a china shop, just swinging around.
Started writing songs when I was about 12 or so.
Seriously?
They're retrofitting me now.
And I'm like, yes, finally.
I've also had the opportunity to go train with Royce Gracie and Dan Severin.
Wow.
I like that. That's different. Stands out.
That day I took my very first bump and it was fun.
There's only one section to go to first. Yeah. Toys.
Bro.
I was like, no, man, surely this guy's not booked out that long.
I haven't laughed that hard since I was a little girl.
What?
Man, this guy won't shut up.
And just a reminder before we get started here, make sure that you like, share, and subscribe to iGadap wherever it is you're listening to. Hit that notification bell so you are notified when a new episode drops. Also, make sure that you go out there and rate and review this episode. Tell me what you think of it. And the more people that do that, the more likely I am to be recommended to somebody else. Now, on to the show. All right, everybody. This is another guy that I met at ArtCon. I've had quite a few of these different guys on here, and I'm really excited to talk to my guest today. He's a Kansas City-based comic artist. He has done all kinds of stuff from Hitmonkey to he was part of Archer and Vampire Diaries and Black Lightning and all kinds of other stuff on CW. Like I said, he's an artist, screenwriter, and editor, and he's a musician. And I'm talking about Kevin Nellen. Man, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, definitely excited to get on here and talk to you about all the cool stuff that you've done.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Happy to, you know, happy to invite your audience into my manic life. It's been a lot of bouncing around, kind of a lot of, you know, just figuring out things and getting excited about them. And then, yeah, and then, you know, anytime a problem comes up and I don't know how to do something, I learn how to do it. And so it's kind of led to a life of a lot of varied occupations within the arts industry.
Awesome, awesome. Well, as we were starting and stuff, you said something about you were restringing a guitar. Are we talking acoustic? Are we talking electric?
Electric. I think this is just audio only, but
yeah, it is. Oh, nice.
At least you can see it. I've got a 72 thin line. It's the early 2000s reissue. Uh-huh. And I've got a, so I finished that one. Then I was in the, I had just started restringing a 59, Les Paul reissue that I picked up earlier last year. So yeah, they were with the like, so we can get into it, but I was in Atlanta for 12 years. Uh-huh. And then moved back to, I was from Kansas City, but I moved back to Kansas City last winter, and then just hadn't had a time to, you know, I've been playing these guitars, but also it's like, you know, the strings were getting woefully less than fun to play and a lot harder, you know. So it's like usually I restring them every you know, total playing time every couple hours, so that may not actually be every couple, like
might be a couple weeks, might be a couple months, depending on the guitar.
Right.
But these two are my main workhorses, and they definitely needed it. So they're getting the whole work up, you know, polishing and all that stuff. So
right on. What kind of music do you like?
All kinds. My main thing is, like, you know, I just call it rock, but I like a lot of like alt rock or like, you know, proggy stuff, like anything from like, you know, Pearl Jam to like Tool or Periphery, Deftones.
Nice.
Dillinger Escape Plan. Yeah. But then also, you know, I've been listening to a bunch of Lainey Wilson lately. So, you know.
Okay. Yeah, it kind of sounds like me all over the place.
Yeah.
My go-to, though, I think I'm mostly a metal guy. But, you know, I mean, I kind of go all over the place. A few weeks ago, it was I was listening to some Deftones for I kind of went on a little bit of a binge listening to them some more and everything. And then I had a little bit with Chevelle for a little while. So,
I love Chevelle, especially that mid-career Chevelle. Like, I mean, no, it sounds bad saying mid-career, but honestly, the one with, oh crap, it's the one with the gray cover with like the doctor. I'm gonna look it up real
quick. No, that's fine. I was honestly,
like, I got into them with their first album because that came out when I was in college, and a buddy of mine that I had bought it, and he didn't like it because he's into much harder stuff, and he's like, you'll like it, it sounds like Tool. And because I was and still am a huge Tool fan, This Type of Thinking could do us in. That's one of my favorite albums of theirs. Yeah. But point number one, their first album. I mean, I spent all of, like, I think that was like 99 listening to that album. Just like, I love the shit out of it. So when Wonder What's Next came, you know, and Wonder What's Next was just massive anyways. But I'm a big fan of like that, from like This Type of Thinking Could Do Us In up to like Sci-Fi Crimes is really good. But honestly, their last one, Nereidis, was really good.
I don't think I've heard any of that one yet. I'll have to
It's like an anagram. It stands for something. Something alien related. I don't know if it's a concept album or what, but it's a good album. The opening one is just like no vocals.
And
it rips. It's cool.
Sweet. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
I love music, man. And it's all part of that artistry, you know. I mean, you're a creative guy, and you know, I see this a lot where it goes hand in hand, where you have people who have, you know, they like to do art, but they also have that music side as well. Yeah. So
I mean, it's the way I've always been. Kind of like I said right before we started recording, or right when when I was introducing myself, it's like, you know, it's like there's, if I see something that needs to be done or that I want to do and I don't know how to do it, I figure out how to do it. So it's like, whether that's drawing or playing music, or the last few years, it's been a lot of music production stuff, like, you know, learning a little bit of drums, learning how to program drums, but learning mixing, mastering, stuff like that. But even then, also, last couple of months since I've been unemployed in the animation industry, because a lot of people are right now.
Yeah.
I've been directing and shooting music videos, so I learned stuff like that. But I actually had spent the previous 5 or 6 years making short films, shooting a lot of stuff, and learning how to do all that stuff, learning how to edit even further, you know, and learning how to direct even more. So it's all one of those things where, like with editing, like, you know, I didn't have any money to pay anybody to edit my short films, so I learned how to do it myself. But I learned that, but which also was a boon, is I was learning how to do a lot of like editing and like in the mixing phase of making music, it is a lot of choices and editing and kind of like, you know, slightly affecting something here or there, you know, learning how to automate, you know. Right. And so like editing a short and editing these music videos has been a lot of that same level of thing, where you have like a wall of sound or visuals, and then you're just kind of like, okay, this one needs to highlight here, this one needs to highlight here.
Right.
Okay, what do I want the audio? And a lot of it comes down to good advice that I was, one of my favorite screenwriter directors is Chris McQuarrie, the guy who's done the last few Mission Impossibles. He started out with Usual Suspects and all that. Mm-hmm. But one of his things that he talks about a lot when you listen to him talk is, what is the audience feeling? You know, so it's like, whether it's storyboards or a comic or, you know, prose or, you know, a short film, music video, you really want to think about what the audience is feeling in that moment and really hammer that home visually.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, and having the right spots when it comes to like the music, like you said, you know, it does help with driving that home, you know, a certain emotion, you know, and hitting, you know, that visual with the sound at the same time. You know, when you got that just perfectly put, you can elicit all kinds of different emotions from somebody. Yeah.
Well, and you can also, it's like the same, the beauty of like working in visual mediums like comics and to a degree storyboards, but comics really does it really well.
Yeah.
And I mean, it, when asked, I always say comic books are the perfect medium. I just happen to work in other things.
Yeah.
comic books, you can do a very juxtaposed thing on multiple, on so many, like, you know, macro levels, because you can have the picture doing one thing and then the words doing another.
Right.
But also what people don't think about is like, you can have the panels next to each other contrasting in all of those ways. So that gives you four extra ways. Then you can have the panels the page as a whole contrasting what's going on inside the panel. Yeah. Like you can set up all of these polyrhythms, to speak in music terms, you know, and it's like they can sit there and be like, you know, Jack Kirby, four panel grid, four on the floor, like 1, 2, 3, 4, or you can get into like, you know, 9 and like 7 or 13 panel pages where it's the rhythm is off, but you're finding that groove anyways, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. And I like that because not only, like you said, you know, you're seeing one thing and you can be reading another, you know, you can get inside that character's mind. You know, they're saying one thing, but they're thinking another. And I love that aspect of comics, you know, and being able to almost tell two sides of the story at the same time.
Yeah, it's the unfortunate thing about the demise of the thought bubble, you know, and it's come back a little bit, but most people went to doing captions, and I'm guilty of that too.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, like, captions are kind of more of an aesthetic thing than I think thought bubbles are completely valid storytelling things, but, you know, there is something about the adultification of comics that makes them seem more childish. But I do also lament their demise as far as, or I shouldn't say demise, but their commonality amongst more mainstream fare, mm-hmm. you know, because right. it was a window into story and character. Really, I mean, story is almost like far, far second place to character, especially in Big Two comics, because it's all perpetual second act. So there's really no beginning and there's really no end. So all character is king, you know, because what happens to them is ultimately transitory. It's the emotion that, again, getting back to that thing, it's the emotion that the audience is feeling that makes them not care that they've read this same thing 60 years, you know?
Right. Right. So we're going to kind of jump into, how did you get started into this?
Sure. The long / short version is I've been drawing since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And I immediately, started, I don't remember which came first, drawing or comics, but they all kind of happened around each other. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like, got a comic and then I immediately started trying to draw one, but you know, who knows? but I remember, like, you know, it's like getting my first couple of comics and like, it was just, nothing makes you feel like that, you know, like even today, reading a comic, like I just spent about a weekend or two ago, I was like, I haven't read comics in a couple of weeks. I just need to sit down and I just read some graphic novels and read like four over the course of a day or two as I had time, and like just enraptured, and nothing feels like that. And that's the same feeling that we all keep trying to chase.
Right.
But I immediately, comics are kind of, I immediately started trying to tell stories. You know, and the same thing happened with guitar. I didn't know how to play guitar, but I found my mom's and I didn't know where to put my fingers. So but I still immediately started trying to write something. You know, I remember trying to write a song. Like I was never that dude that wanted to shred. I was that dude that wanted to, like, you know, give, like, tell a story or convey an emotion, like that sort of thing. But guitar playing was a more expensive thing. And my parents, you know, were reluctant to be supportive of that because of their histories with music stuff and some other things, you know, and also just, you know, knowing that, like, it's a hard life. But here I am. But I was drawing, and I was doing that and reading a lot of comics. Like, I was making my own. I didn't understand how comics were printed at the time, so I was, you know, stapling 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper together in grade school and making my own Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics.
Nice.
When I remember me and a buddy in like fifth grade, this would have been around like the first Image years and stuff like that. Fifth or sixth grade, something like that. But we were making like straight up Wetworks ripoffs. you know, trying to draw like Will Spartaccio and all that. But yeah, and then from there, it just became like comics were an obsession. I became obsessed with the, once I found out that people made them, and I, you know, it's like there was Comic Scene Magazine, there was David Anthony Crafts, like, and I'm like a 9, 10 year old, you know, 11 year old finding this stuff, you know, or sorry, more like 10, 11, 12 year old finding this stuff going. My, my dad was in the first Iraq War, and there was a comic shop near the base that he was stationed at or based out of. So before he actually got shipped over and left in time and during, my mom would go out there to use the commissary, and there was a comic shop in that town. So I had a pull list, and this would have been like 92, 91, 92, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and that's how I, and Wizard Magazine 7 came out, and that's how I got into Cerebus, and like that started like an indie black and white addiction, because Dave always talked about all these other people and all these other comics in the front notes and in the back letters columns. So it's like I'm just in immediately, like, you know, the person in me that wants to know how to do things was trying to figure out how to make comics based on all of this. And that's what I was doing. And I drew hundreds of pages, was writing my own stories, all of them based off of other shit, because I wasn't, you know, hadn't formed the original part of my brain yet.
Right.
I was tracing and like referencing Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee books and Will Spartaccio and Todd. You know, it's like I can find stuff from like the early 90s where it's like just me straight like jacking like their cover like which we all did, you know.
Like, oh yeah, like, definitely.
And it's what, and it's how you learn now. It's how you learn, you know, it's how you kind of figure out the how your brain does that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, and then, you know, the so it was like writing my own stuff and like, you know, I remember like Dave's letter, the note from the publisher that eventually became the Cerebus Guide to Self-Publishing, or I don't remember the exact title, but it was the guide to self-publishing essentially. And it started out as, and I was like every month, just like, that was almost more important to me than what was going on in the comic pages at the time, because I was learning how to do all this and I was trying to figure that shit out. And that, so that was like my Bible for like, okay, so it's like, I don't just, you know, buy one type of paper. I buy multiple papers and I try them out and I see what works with me, what works with these pencils,
right?
Try out these, you know, and it's like, and obviously being a kid, I don't have the money to buy all this stuff, but like, it gave me a thing of like, hey mom, we're at Hobby Lobby. Here's a, Crowquill nib and pen, nib and pen stock set. Like, okay, get me that, get me this bottle of ink, you know?
Yeah.
And I will say that one of the more formative things was there was I forget what the conventions were called, because right now the main convention in Kansas City is called Planet Comic Con. But before that, there were these smaller shows in the, for the shout out to the local people who remember the Reardon Center, those conventions back in the 90s. But I went to those. And it was one of those things where my mom would just drop me off and then I would wander around and meet, you know, buy some comics. But mostly I showed my work to professional adults or people who, you know, seemed to be professional adults, you know, and got feedback and got criticism. And I'm like 13, 14, you know, doing this.
Yeah.
And I remember I showed some stuff to a very young, just fresh out of the gate, Phil Hester. And I remember it was right around when Rust was coming out. So it would have been like issues one or two, something like that.
Okay.
Call back for the old heads there who remember that. And also shout out to Caliber Comics. But I remember showing him my Walmart poster board pages drawn with Sharpie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, he was very kind, and he just was like, you've got something, you're gonna get there, but you're using materials that aren't great, you know. He was very kind about it. And that's so cool. He took his Bristol sketchboard and said, your mom take you to Hobby Lobby, you got a Hobby Lobby? He's like, yeah. And I was like, yeah. He's like, okay. He tore off part of the cover. He's like, have her get you this. He handed me his brush pen that he was using. Start with this. He told me, and he said, you need to be working on, you, the better your materials are, the, you know, you'll come off more professional and stuff like that. And you know, and he told me the thing at the right time, because ultimately materials don't matter, as you find out as you get older. It's what you've learned. But that helped me, you know. It helped coalesce. It unlocked something about how all these, you know, especially like, you know, looking at like sketches and black and white line art and like David Anthony Crafts comics, you know, Comics Interview or whatever, like seeing all that stuff and being like, how do they do this? Like, how do they, you know, like, I remember finding out when J. Scott Campbell was doing Danger Girl, and he was posting process stuff, and like it was either in magazines or maybe the back of the book or something. I don't know, because the internet was still kind of coming up then. But finding out that like he did his thumbnails at like, you know, a small size and then would photocopy them up to be bigger and then lightbox that, like that blew my mind. And I immediately started doing that, you know.
Wow. And so you said all this. That is something that you were doing at ArtCon, wasn't it? Is people would bring their art to you. And I know that there were some other artists that were there that were doing that as well, right?
Oh, you mean like giving them feedback and stuff?
Right, yes.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. Anybody that wants to. Like I learned from Phil, and I try to carry that with me. You know, it's like anybody who asks for feedback or for help or whatever, I try to do what I can, because you have to pay that stuff forward, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
You have to foster, like, to me, it's non-negotiable. You have to foster a community of people who support each other. And yeah. And as we see a lot in comics right now, there's a very unhealthy amount of not doing that, you know?
Yes.
And so I think it's important always, but now especially more prescient considering the, you know, the recent events, that you have to foster a sense of like you're doing the right thing, you're meant for this world, you're meant for this path, like keep making things, your voice matters.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't matter where you're at on your path, there's always your people who have been there, are there, or are about to be there, you know.
Right And Phil's a great guy, you know. He was there too, I believe, at ArtCon. And I'm actually planning on talking to him here soon too. But yeah, I having a strong community that supports each other in any endeavor is very important, and especially in the art community, I think, because, you know, it's art, it's a part of you. You're almost bearing your soul when it comes to your art, you know. Very so much. Having all these people, having a strong community that supports each other is very important when it comes to that.
Well, and the thing, you know, that that has been highlighted by recent stuff is that, you know, it's like, it's a very solitary way to make art.
Right.
And most art is very solitary. There's, you know, like being in a band can be solitary, but it also can be very collaborative.
Yes.
But ultimately you're never inside the other person's head when they're creating, you know, so it's still, mm-hmm. there's a solitary mind there that I understand and I get. And, you know, so it's like having a community that supports itself and a community that, like, you know, doesn't that isn't just a mob, you know.
Yeah.
Super important, in all ways, you know. Having I mean honestly, really, just to get down to it, just empathy, and always, yep. always just driving home empathy, because in order to be the kinds of storytellers that we are and that we want or hopefully strive to be, because ultimately, like, you know, it's like the main money makers for comics is superheroes, and that's a genre of storytelling that should ultimately be empathetic towards people and trying to find the better and be better and teach people how to be better. And sometimes we do it through a lens of some awful events, but the ultimate goal is everybody is redeemable, everybody has a second chance, and everybody is worth saving, you know. And I think that's important.
Yeah, definitely. So there was a book that you had displayed whenever I met you, and mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to talk to you about it. It was really cool because I actually have the vinyl for it, and that's Vulgar Display of Power by mm-hmm. Pantera. Can I talk about how you got involved in that project?
Sure. It goes back a ways. The editor of Heavy Metal at that time was a wonderful gentleman named Rance Hosley, and he and I met in the mid-2000s, and I did he did an anthology based around the music of Tori Amos, who he grew up with and was a friend of his, mm-hmm. called Comic Book Tattoo, and I was in that. And Rance and I, you know, just kind of hit it off and really liked each other, and I've gotten along and stayed in touch and just supported each other throughout the years. So he reached out to me when he was doing the Heavy, and he and I reached out and kind of talked about working on some stuff in the meantime, but it didn't really come together.
Yeah.
And then when he was at Heavy Metal, he was putting together a tribute issue for Gojira.
Okay.
Well, I think there was a bunch of different artists. I think it might have been a bunch of different artists, but anyways, he came to me and said, "Hey, are you into Gojira at all?" And I'm like, "Heck yeah, fuck yeah, I am." You know.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't remember if he gave me the song or if I got to choose, but unfortunately, it's one of my favorites anyways, which was Shooting Star. So I did a story for Shooting Star. which ultimately, and I think part of the reason why Rance liked it is what I did had nothing to do with the song itself so much as it was, but it did, because they wrote that song about their mom.
Uh-huh.
I believe her passing, if I remember correctly. So it was them kind of dealing with death in that way. And I wrote my story about a very, very metaphorical, visually, and whereas talking about that juxtaposition, the visuals were very fantastical and metaphorical.
Yeah.
And whereas the prose was very autobiographical, talking about my grandma passing away and my mom almost dying. So like there, so it was kind of like that thing. And I think he really dug that. Apparently the band liked it as well.
That's cool.
So when a couple years go by, he calls me up. He's like, hey, I've got this Pantera thing. You want to write and draw, like, you know, what do you want to do? And I'm like, yeah, I want to do it. I don't want to work with anybody else. He's great. And he's like, yeah, great, let's. And he did give me the song. He's like, hey, this is the song. Are you cool with this? I'm like, dude, I love that whole album. Yeah, give me the whatever. It was admittedly one that I was less familiar with, just because, like, what, you know, it's like I'm just like anybody. Like, I have my favorites that I kind of go to. And honestly, I'll be that guy. I love Vulgar Display, but my favorite album is the one I got into them on, which is Far Beyond Driven.
Okay.
Yeah. So like that was my, I didn't dig Pantera. They were fine. They were around. I didn't get it until I heard Far Beyond Driven, but also Far Beyond Driven is kind of their heaviest.
Yes. Yeah. So,
if that says anything about me. but once I did, you know, then obviously Vulgar and Cowboys are fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, he gave me Live in a Hole, and I pitched him a couple of different ideas about what it could be. One was more straight up, like kind of like dealing with the song itself. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what the other one was. And then the other one was the idea of this lone wolf, an actual wolf, but he's being stalked and tracked by spoilers for anybody who hasn't read it yet, it's only 9 pages, so it's not like you're missing a lot, but who's being tracked by, you know, either his old pride, I don't know what they call wolf, his own pack. Sorry.
Yeah.
By his old pack. Because I think in my kind of thinking about it, I had read something about like how wolves kind of have to battle for, if there's no clear pack leader. I think there's, I could be getting this totally wrong. Somebody in your audience is going to be like, actually, it's this. which, you know, yeah. Whatever. It's a story.
Exactly.
So anyway, but also just really just going on the themes of, like, you know, not wanting to be a part of this group, or having been shunned from this group, either way are valid. And then, you know, but basically being forced into a confrontation that nobody gets out of alive, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just kind of thematically kind of dug that. Also, I was just kind of thought the idea of just drawing some wolves sounded cool, and then I had to actually learn how to fucking draw them, which I came up with a way of doing it that I'm happy with, but I'm sure there's definitely some animal artists out there that'd be like, I don't know, this is a little sus. But graphically, also, it was it was a good thing for me, because I hadn't done a lot of comics in the last few years, so it was a way to play with some things storytelling wise, because I like all the other stories in that book, but I am proud to say that I think mine stands out as being visually one of the most different ones.
Uh-huh.
And I felt that was important to try and do, you know, even though I didn't know what the others were going to look like. I was very pleasantly surprised, happy and surprised when I saw it. And I was like, oh, these are all pretty more straightforward. Mine is a little weirder looking than the rest. So,
well, I mean, it's unique, you know, and that's what you want, is you want it to be unique.
I wanted it to be experienced. I wanted it to feel like the song, with like
exactly
some sharp edges, some, yep, you know, because there's some weird turns in that song musically that I think are interesting.
Yep.
So
whenever it comes to playing music, do you play by ear, or are you trained when it comes to music at all?
No, I have no formal theory. Any theory I know is by accident, or I learned in the last couple of years.
Okay.
I took a year or so of guitar lessons, but really once I got to a certain point, it became about me learning how to write songs, teaching me and writing songs. My guitar teacher could tell that. He could tell I was not going to give a shit about any of his King's X solos he wanted me to learn, or any like Van Halen shit, anything like that. You know, I like all that stuff. It's just, I don't give, I could even now, like, soloing to me consists, I'm a Nirvana kid. I grew up where the solo is kind of a repeat of the melody. And while I can do some Mike McCready stuff, I'm not that good at it. So I just kind of try to stay in my lane.
Gotcha.
But I, you know, I'm a big fan of, like, you know, like bluesy melodic stuff, big David Gilmour fan. Yeah. So like that, if that says anything more about like my style of like that stuff. So it became he and I just jamming, and that was kind of become, well, after a while, he was just like, man, I mean, you can keep coming here, but you don't need to, you're fine. You're going to, you know, cause it's like, you know, we got to a point where I learned how to play Little Wing, and he was like, you're probably, and I can't do this now, so, you know, don't ask me to, but at the time he was like, you pretty much took to this better than anybody I've taught in my years of teaching. I think you'll be fine. So,
that's,
you know,
cool.
And not that that's a high watermark, but it is soulfully, I think, is where more it comes from, you know?
Yeah.
But so then I immediately started trying to find bands to be in. And I tried to join a couple of bands with adults who were much older than me, and I was just not ready, but I had the balls to go to the auditions anyways, you know.
Right.
My mom dropped me off and then picked me back up when, you know, all that. But I got into, around the age of like 14, 15, I got into a church band. So I was I was playing guitar with we played every Wednesday and Sunday night. And did that for at least a year or two. Timeline gets a little fuzzy for me. I'd have to ask my friends, but I want to say it was at least almost 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Some of those things where, you know, at the age of like 14, 15, I'm playing in front of hundreds of people, you know, and we got to a place where we've been asked to come to other churches in the region. So we would go gig at other churches. You know, and ultimately, you know, like, that's also like, you know, I'd grown up in the church, grown up Southern Baptist, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was a way, as I was getting older and starting to realize I philosophically disagreed less and less with what I was hearing every week, mm-hmm. but it was a way, it kept me with my friends, kept me in there. And then I found out years later, the youth pastor disbanded us because he said God had led him to make that decision. Found out later, years later, that the pastor of the church had come to the youth pastor and said, this band is getting too popular, shut it down. He didn't like the competition. So he was a real vain pastor, and really kind of soured me on a lot of stuff that I'm still kind of trying to work through and not put on everybody else. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, you know, and I think that happens. He had a very large church. He you know, had a very large congregation that propped him up. He had a lot of foot soldiers within the deacons. And so it just kind of was a thing. Yeah. But that drove me to a place of going like, no, fuck this. And so I started putting together my own band, writing my own songs even more.
Gotcha.
And so I had a band in high school. And then when we were 16, we put out a cassette, went to a professional studio, had it, you know, did all the right, but, you know, we put out a cassette and then wrote enough songs. We put out a CD within a year after that. And we were the only band at the time, our age and in our area of town doing that. You know, and within a couple of years, everybody else was doing it too. Not that we were like the first, we just were, you know, like nobody in our area at that time had really gone through that.
Yeah.
And all the while I'm drawing, you know, hundreds of comic pages and collecting comics and, you know, all that stuff. So
were you drawing album covers and stuff too?
So the first album cover, I remember doing in MS Paint, and I made it look like I used, and I found the font. I was a big Pumpkins fan, so I found the font we used. And so we did, like, the band was called Star Honey, so the logo was kind of a melting star.
Cool, cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, for the first tape, you know, it's like we were printing the cassettes, the covers off at school and duplicating them. We found some friends with some high-end duplicators, not high-end, but just they were good enough, you know. So we did all that ourselves for the first tape, sold probably a couple hundred of those, hand selling them at school.
Nice.
And then when we did the CD, I didn't draw any art for the CD. I took all the photos, did all of the pre-production. What was the name of the place? Disc Makers was a new thing at that time.
Okay.
For those of you who are musicians and have put out albums yourself, Disc Makers was a new thing. So it was like, I shot all the stuff on 35 film, went to a super professional and very expensive place to get it all developed correctly, mm-hmm. you know, and like 17 doing this and trying to figure all this crap out, you know? But it was part of my thing. Like, and I found actually recently, I found some stuff where I had sent them like diagrams of like, I'd sent them examples of my handwriting and I had sent them examples of other things like where I'd send, like, I want this font to look like my handwriting, find gotcha. Something that's as close as you can, you know? And they did a fine job. Like it's close. And it was close to what it was at the time. Yeah. Nowadays I just handwrite everything out because I can just dump it into Photoshop or, you know, whatever. And
yeah. Much easier now.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And then it's like, you know, and then, we were very fortunate that our drummer, who I still play with and I'm friends with today, he'd had a relative pass, unfortunately, and left him some money. So he gifted that to the band in the sense, and we're able to get the CD pressed and go through.
Oh, wow.
That so yeah,
right on.
Otherwise it was just me working like at Pizza Hut, you know, and just basically booking studio time as much as possible while we were writing and trying to make, you know, do all this stuff. So
wow. And you still make music now, don't you?
Yeah. I needed to be working on other stuff yesterday, but I spent all day yesterday working on new stuff. Like I said, I still play when I'm, now that I'm back in Kansas City, I've been getting together regularly with my drummer that I played with when we were 16.
Oh, cool.
He still plays and he's in bands and stuff like that. So it's like, you know, working, I have an EP of songs that's I'm in the middle of finishing, but I also have a new album that I've got about 9 or 10 songs kind of sketched out that he and I are working on. So
awesome. And I know you did like a music video recently for somebody as well.
Yeah, I got a couple of those going on. So I did one for a KC/Nashville artist. Her name is Kate Cosentino. She was on The Voice. I could not tell you what season, but she was on The Voice. Really, really phenomenal singer and musician. And wonderful person to be around. But yeah, me and my producer that I've been working with on these videos, we met her at a Chamber of Commerce event here in Kansas City. Like within weeks of moving back, I was like immediately trying to like meet new people. We met, and she happened to be backed by really good friends of mine, this local band called Wonderfuzz. So I went up to say hi to them, and then ended up meeting her, and me and my producer were like, "You're great. Can we make something with you? Like, can we shoot do you need a music video? Something like that." So, you know, and she was like, "Yeah." So she got us this great song. And we spent a couple days in December shooting it. And then I edited it in between life stuff and all that. And then it came out in February. And then in February, my drummer, the other band that he is in, is called The Sound and the Fury, and they were active in the late 90s to the up to the mid 2000s. Okay. They got back together last year, and so they've been working on new material. So I directed and shot and edited a video for their new EP, and the EP itself is coming out, I think, weekly, or like they're doing it song by song for the next couple weeks, and then I think the video will be out sometime after that. So there's a lyric video up for a song called Alpha and Omega.
Okay.
And then the video. So I did the lyric video, but that actually, you know, production wise, it actually plays a part in the backdrop of them performing and stuff like that. So it's gotcha. Like it made a multi-purpose thing.
That's so cool. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So do you have a certain medium that you prefer? Like whenever you're having a day and you just need to sit down and get something out, do you prefer
It's always music. Yeah.
Is it always music? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I mean, you can listen to those days because I put out these albums amidst all the rock stuff I do. I put out these and I probably should have come up with a different name for it, but it's all under my name. So it's probably pretty confusing for people. But I have these albums called Guitarscapes.
Okay.
It's ambient guitar noise, and there's nothing pre-written or planned. Each track is what you hear is how long it took to make.
Oh wow! Okay,
and it's all you know, just on the fly, off the cuff, just emotion and just kind of dealing with the moment. And then, you know, any editing that happens, it might be like I'll add more delay, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's really if you want to that, and that's always the kind of the thing that I is healing, and if I can, you know, because writing is, you know. Writing is only cathartic once you've done something that you feel good about, and that's so infrequent. Right. Drawing is only cathartic when you've kind of finished it, but then you have the mountain of the next page. And I don't mean to, other people have different feelings about it and different processes, but mine has always been drawing is hard. Like writing is hard. These things take a lot of time and they take a lot of consideration. They take a lot of craft. They take a lot of learning. They take a lot of self-introspection and they take a lot of like, you know, they do take comparison with other people. And then you have to throw all that out when it starts to fuck with you, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I can sit there and I can play the guitar and I can just strum chords and I don't care if it's the same chord progression as 100 other songs. It's in the moment to me right then. And it feels new and genuine, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. And it's just the act of, I love drawing. I love writing. I love, you know, all the things that I do. It's just that none of them are immediate and as gratifying as, you know, picking up, even if it's like a ukulele and pushing my finger down on a fret and I immediately start creating something.
Right. Know? Yeah. No, I totally understand that. You know, I grew up in a musical family. I play a bunch of different instruments.
Yeah.
And so being able to sit down and after a long day jumping on the piano or something and just coming up with something out of the air and getting lost in your music is very cathartic.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, and like I said yesterday, I was supposed to work on some other stuff, but I ended up working on I was recording some guitar parts over some drum stuff that we had tracked. And I got caught up in, cause we'd just been jamming on this song. So there's no real structure. And I've been just kind of taking the jams and chopping them up to create a structure. And so that to me is fun. And so I get so lost in it because I'm still writing, you know, editing, like trying to be like, oh, okay, what if I cut this part that he did and put it over here and then I play this over it? You know, like that to me is still very immediate and engaging to me. Whereas I can sit there and I can write a sentence for a comic book that says, okay, she walks down the street and she's thinking this. That still can be hard because I'm like, well, okay, it is what she's thinking, conveying the actual emotion I need. And if I draw this, what do I need to be showing? Do I need to be playing it straight? Do I need to show a different facial expression? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's all those layers and all those colors that are not immediately gratifying. Does that make sense? Right.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense.
I love it all. It just is, it's a different process. It's a different, you know, and much to the chagrin of, you know, maybe some people around me or whatever, but like, you know, if I'm sitting down drawing for fun and letting my mind wander and getting lost in it, then I'm just drawing naked girls. That's all, you know, that's all I'm doing. You know? And I don't know that that's as productive as, you know.
Well, yeah.
Fascinating people, fascinating places returns. I talked to Eric Maddox, the man responsible for capturing Saddam Hussein, attorney Jason Wright, whose career was rocked when he was tasked with defending September 11th mastermind, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. I speak with experts about human trafficking, the death of Princess Diana, the legacy of Scott of Antarctica. I talk with a TV celebrity who abandoned stardom for the simple life, chat with astronaut Jim Weatherby, and much, much more. Please subscribe so you don't miss out on any of the action.
Hey, listen!
My name is A-Crown, and if you enjoy fan fiction, be sure to check out The Author's Crown. We have stories from all kinds of franchises like DC, Power Rangers, and Transformers. But wait, there's more! We also do original crossovers you didn't know you needed. Head on over to YouTube and search for The Author's Crown today.
So, we're going to kind of switch gears here a little bit. What would you say is one of your favorite moments in your career?
The whole life or the comics or animation or
whole life.
Hmm.
Or if you have one for each, you can go with that too.
Might be easier to do one for each.
Okay.
Music wise, there's two.
Okay.
One was being 16 and putting out an album and saying fuck you to everybody that said that we couldn't do it and thought we were and who hadn't heard us, didn't know us, you know, just kids can be shitty, thought we were gonna suck, and then we made them all eat shit, and they still to this day when I run into people from high school, they're god, you guys were so fucking good, and it's like, yeah, I know, motherfucker, I was there. We weren't, but we were the best that we could be at the time, you know what
right
I mean?
Yeah,
we're pretty good for 16 year olds, you know. The second musically would be after a lot of years of trying in different bands and then a lot of years of not, like, I pretty much stopped really doing a lot of music stuff around 2010. I still played and stuff, but it didn't, I stopped being a focus. And then in 2016, after a bunch of life shit happened, I wrote and put out my first solo album. It's called A Girl, A Tree, A Dream.
Okay.
And while it's very rough, it basically was like I needed to get that out in order to move on with my life, both personally and musically. And once I did, it set me on a path to where, even though it took me like 7 years to put new stuff out, in 2022 I put out an EP called shit, what is the EP called? Songs from the Giant's Chair. But that really kind of like I was working on all these other albums and working on all these other EPs, and I was frustrated with where I was at musically, and I said fuck it. That first year or two of pandemic, 2020 and 2021, I wrote dozens if not hundreds of songs, and some of them are finished, some of them didn't, some of them are good, a lot of them are bad, but I did all that and I threw all of it into the digital trash bin. I mean, I still have it all, but
yeah.
And I wrote within a span of a couple of weeks, wrote the five songs that became that EP, did it all myself with some help on mixing and mastering from other people, and put that out, and then I've just kept putting out music since then, you know what I mean? Yeah. Put out the Guitar Safe stuff, put out, like, you know, there's like three of those out, there's another EP out, there's a couple different singles out, I have another, you know what I mean? So like that moment of, even though there was some gaps in time, but that thing of just like, fuck it, I'm doing it myself, which is, I learn over and over again, is pretty much always how it needs to be, because you know, otherwise it's just not going to get done. But you know, and then sometimes even I don't get it done, but the majority of it being like, if I just do it myself, I'm happy with it, and I take responsibility for anything that's not better, good with it, and I make it better the next time around. So putting those two things there. Comics wise, I mean, honestly, it's a similar thing. Doing my first book, Gearhead, with Dennis Hopeless, that was huge.
Yeah.
You know, because like, yeah, it just was. You know, it was formative for both of us and put us both where we are now. You know, for better and for worse.
Right.
You know, and he and I are still friends. You know, he was just over at the house the other day, and you know, it's like he's doing well. His new book is amazing. But then good, second thing good with that would be putting out Suicide Sisters Volume 1, which it's out of print right now, but it was the first thing that I had written that I finished and put out, whereas I have all these Dropbox of hundreds of other scripts that don't get finished, and that one I finished, which set me on the path of doing more stuff and writing more and doing, you know, and to doing what I'm doing, what I've been doing, which is like writing these short stories, writing, doing these one shots, writing I wrote a graphic novel for Z2. I'm working on Suicide Sisters Volume 2, working on a couple other things, you know, writing screenplays. So just kind of doing that and putting that out there. A lot of it's just basically like, what I'm proud of is these events where I proved to myself and to others that I could do it, you know?
Right. Yeah. So you were the art director for Hit Monkey season 2, I believe is what you told me, right?
Season one director on season 2.
Okay. So that's Marvel. How did you get involved into doing these different projects with Marvel? Because I know you've been part of the S.H.I.E.L.D. comic as well, haven't you?
So the thing that a lot of people probably don't nor should they understand, but the thing probably a lot of people don't understand is that Marvel Comics has very little to do with Marvel TV and Marvel movies.
Okay.
They don't, the TV and movie people, honestly, I mean, not to tell tales out of school, but they don't give a fuck about the comic side other than mining it for IP and story ideas, you know?
Right. Okay.
And the comic side has no oversight or anything into the TV world, you know?
Yeah.
The production company that makes Archer is the common thing there. So I worked on Archer, and then they got in bed with Marvel and got in bed, you know, and started pitching on doing certain things. And there's things I wish I could talk about, but I can't, you know. but there's some cool stuff that just didn't happen. But the thing that did happen was Hitmonkey. And I was tapped to art direct on that from kind of not inception, but, you know, pretty early on by the company.
Right.
And the thing to understand about the company is that on Archer, when you see the credit art director, for the first like 12 seasons, that was also the director. So being okay. Archer, right, I was technically the head director. Uh-huh. Kind of ended up being a different bit in that I had a director over me, and so it was me working in tandem with him. Uh-huh. It was a learning thing for all of us because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I was learning how to do the things on the job. Also, COVID as a new show, and every time you're making a new show, the thing people, you know, maybe should know is that like when you're making a new show, even if you've made stuff with the people previously, each yeah. show is different, and so you have to learn how to make the show while you're making it. So that was, you know, the pilot was a very long and difficult process for that.
Yeah.
And COVID happened, and so we're in the middle of making this very difficult show, and then we all of a sudden have to go work from home, and now I'm not seeing the 200 people in my office every day. I'm sitting there on a Zoom meeting with, you know, 30 people, and
right
me and, you know, as art director, and I'm, you know, overseeing the backgrounds department, character design, overseeing a little bit of the animation side of stuff, overseeing you know, storyboards, you know, and my director's overseeing me overseeing all that, and my producer, you know what I mean? And it's like, so it's a lot to deal with, but I think we made a good show. And then with season two came around, I was like, you know, if I'm gonna do this, I need to, you know, have some sense of forward movement, and that meant being more in a directorial role, and we split apart the directing duties so that there was an art director, and yeah. then, you know, so like the job that I had where I was doing, you know, me and my associate art director, where we were doing like the jobs of like five people for each of us, it got split into those five people, you know. So that was a good thing, and that was a good learning lesson. So it allowed me to kind of do more directing, do more working with story and edit, and, you know, directly dealing with the producers and the head writers and stuff like that. So
awesome. Yeah. So do you have any goals set for this next year?
Oof. Man, I've been fucking racking my brain trying to figure that out for myself. If you got any suggestions. No, I do. I do. I joke, but I do. I got to be in the business of me. I got to be in the driver's seat, you know. I grew up with that, you know, black and white, boom, self-publishing, you know, in my head, and own what you create and stuff like that. And then I allowed myself to get away from it for a while. And, you know, now I'm in a place where the industry has changed so much that like nobody's making money. It's everything's a crapshoot. And here I am, like, you know, it's like trying to figure out like, okay, how do I start over as that person in this new world, you know? So that's kind of the goal, is create opportunity, create circumstances, be open and be honest about, you know, about what I can do and what I can't do, and collaborate with people who are on the same page, you know? So, and I know that all sounds very nebulous, but a lot of it is just basically, I am like, I'm going to be shooting a short film next week that literally the idea of is only based purely on the fact that the location became available that is never going to be available ever again. And me and my producer looked at it and went, all right, this is what we've been trying to make, this other short film with mm-hmm. this same concept, but let's take that concept and put it in this location, and it's going to be way better for it, hopefully. But now it's like that would have never have happened had I not put myself in a place where it's like, okay, working with people who are open, working with people who are excited about this stuff, but also being someone who has shown I can deliver and I can make these things. So just give me a little bit of leeway and a lot of trust, you know? So, and the unfortunate, I mean, you know, it's like, there's no money in it, you know, like I'm not making right. money in any of the stuff that I'm doing right now, which sucks for my, you know, my girlfriend, but, that's the thing, is doing all this stuff trying in order to build me as a business, build me as a brand, and be like, hey, you want to be in the Kevin Mellon business, whether it's, you know, directing, screenwriting, storyboarding, comic booking, stuff like that. But ultimately the idea is being at the driver's seat, you know.
Definitely.
I might be driving somebody else's car, but I'm the one, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if there, you know, if there is more Hitmonkey and they want me back, you know, I have no idea if that's, you know, whatever, but if there is more Hitmonkey and stuff like that, like, you know, and they want me back, then that's a conversation. But also the part of the conversation is like, you know, okay, like how am I contributing, you know, in a way that like is meaningful for me as a human being and as the business of Kevin Mellon, you know?
Totally get it.
Yeah. And you know, I don't say it as much anymore, but I, and not for any reason, but I just kind of stopped. But the thing that I talked about for a long time in interviews, and it was, I always told people that I asked myself three questions when I'm taking on any new opportunity or when something is presented to me. And the three questions are, will it make me a better artist? Will it make me a better person? And can I contribute in a meaningful way? So if I, you know, and generally if you get two of those, it answers the third one on its own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the thing I'm really trying to maintain and bring back. Cause like I had a period of just taking on anything that would pay me and doing a lot of, I did a bunch of bad comics in the 2008 ish arena that like, I don't ever talk about. They're not in my credits, you know, because they're terrible. And all, I took them for money and then those places ended up being late paying me. So it wasn't even worth taking, but I put myself into a very depressing spot. And I came out of it with those three questions and my life has been infinitely better for it since. So
right on. So what was your favorite comic growing up?
New Mutants, and it's a tie between New Mutants and the Silvestri Jim Lee X-Men.
Okay, all right.
Like the Uncanny, like the out, the stuff in the Outback up through when Jim left.
Okay,
to do Adjectiveless X-Men. That era, like, there's just something like that. That's Silvestri's version of the Marauders is just perpetually burned into my brain. You know, and then New Mutants, because it's like I'm a big sucker for soap opera, which is obviously, so that's all X-Men is just soap opera,
right?
But New Mutants was the kid version of that, and I'm forever, even before I was in high school, I was obsessed with stories that took place in and around high school era stuff, which is like, I mean, it's like I'm a big Buffy fan, Veronica Mars,
okay,
you know, stuff like, you know, it's like, even, you know, and name a high school show, whether it's a comedy or a drama, and I will likely be like, yep. Like, even stuff like She's All That. And,
yeah.
Can't hardly wait, you know. Like,
But you say that, I actually just recorded an episode, not for my podcast, but for one of my friends, Ty. And all we did is talk about Angel for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
So
I need to rewatch Angel. I actually avoided it for a long time. I only watched the episodes that crossed over with Buffy directly.
Okay.
And at one point somebody was like, knock it off, it's a good show. Cause the first season was really bad in my mind.
Yeah.
And then when I went back and rewatched it, like, you know, after getting over myself, I really enjoyed the whole thing, but I am less familiar with it than I am. Cause I've, up until a few years back, and when I say a few years, it's anywhere between 5 and 10. But from 1999 up until 5 or 8 years ago, I would rewatch the whole of Buffy every year.
Really?
So like, yeah. Okay. So what that means is like I've seen those first like 5 seasons probably, you know, like if not, well, definitely more than 100 times, because I would loop them while working, you know.
Yep.
And then once I stopped doing that and I was watching other stuff more, I would just do a big rewatch.
Yeah.
I would say, but the thing is, yeah, definitely those first 5 seasons, and season 6, I've seen probably the most out of any of them, because that is my favorite season.
About to ask you that.
Yeah, the musical episode is kind of one of my favorite things ever.
I can sing the entire musical.
Yeah, it might take some prompting now, but I used to know it from back to front unprompted. Yeah.
So, well, anytime somebody asks, says, I've got a theory, I say, you know, it
must be witches.
It must, well, not the it must be witches. It's a demon, a dancing demon. Is it right there? You know?
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah, I say that every time, and they just look at me like, what are you talking about? So
I was saddened to see that the guy who played the demon passed away recently.
I saw that. Yeah.
He was phenomenal. I mean, he was a phenomenal, you know, dancer and singer anyways, but him and that, he was just so fucking good. But also that season is so dark and damaged, and I'm just drawn to that exponentially. So, it's, you know, I mean, and I've read all the behind the scenes stuff over the last couple of years of like what was going on, and I empathize, but I'm like, yeah, it made a great piece of art from someone like me. So,
Yeah. Well, and I love, so on, once more with feeling, I love how it
told so much more of the story. You know, it would sound upbeat in certain parts, but the lyrics themselves were actually very, deep. Yeah. So
Hera's stuff was fucking heartbreaking. Still is to this day.
Yeah, definitely.
Not even because you know how it's turning out. It's just like, it, take it out of context and just looks into what her songs are about. And you're just like, oh God, this is.
Yeah, definitely.
It's also like, you know, being, you know, like there's a level of angst that I feel like I just will probably always have that stuff happened to. So
I'm actually really excited. I get to meet James Marsters next month.
I hear he's very nice.
Yeah. So last week I was told that he was canceling and he wasn't going to be there. And so I was very disappointed, but then he came back and was like, well, I won't be there Friday, but I'll be there Saturday and Sunday. So I'm like, okay, cool. And I'm really excited to meet him.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I feel like I didn't answer part of your question though.
I don't remember what the question was, if I'm being honest.
No, it's interesting. Cause I love all that. Like I love, you know, it's like, like stuff, like there's stuff that I need to watch that is so right up my alley. Like I have not seen 13 Reasons Why yet.
Okay, that's a good one.
I know for sure that like that would be probably up right up my alley. Yeah. But instead of watching something new, I'll just go back and watch fucking Gilmore Girls again, like an idiot. You know, I love that show, so I'm not knocking it. But
yeah. my wife would love to hear that. That's her go to show. Like when she doesn't feel good or something like that, she goes and watches that.
Yeah.
And you know, I pick on her and be like, "Oh, there's Sam." She's like, "No, that's Dean." I was like, "No, Dean's his brother." You know.
Well, and that's another one. Yeah, like so, like I mean, my book Suicide Sisters, I came up with that in like the mid 2000s or whatever, and like I was making it, and you know, and I started showing stuff to people, and they'd be like, "Oh, this is like Supernatural," and I'm like, "What the fuck is that? It's not like anything." And then so I had to go and watch Supernatural in order to be like, "Okay, how close is what I'm doing to this?" Yeah. And it's like, okay, there's some stuff that's close. Like the main concept is similar. It's two siblings fighting demons, you know. So it's like,
okay,
like away from that, you know.
Yeah.
But I also it was, I became a huge fan of that show. I still haven't finished it, sadly. Oh. But I think I dropped off around season 12.
Okay.
Just like, I've just been so busy, I just haven't caught up.
Right.
Now's a good time to catch up, probably though. I like anybody else, like I got super into it, and it was nice though, because it definitely gave me a list of things to avoid, not only to not be like them, but also it gave me a list of things to avoid where I'm like, oh, that's just a bad avenue to go down for my story. You know what I mean?
Not
necessarily for theirs. Like they did a lot of they did some wacky shit, but the thing that I love about that show, like on a long enough timeline, is they tried everything.
They did,
because you know, it's like shit, the show keeps being popular, how the fuck do we bring them back now? Which is totally the X-Men, you know what I mean? It's totally soap opera. It's like, you know, it's like All My Children or Santa Barbara or whatever, you know. It's like, okay, we killed this character off, but they were insanely popular, let's bring them back in a year, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like so
yeah. Well, and it's been really cool seeing Supernatural is by far my all-time favorite show.
Okay.
Especially the first 5 seasons. You cannot beat the story from the first 5 seasons.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And so I go back and rewatch those all the time. But now it's cool because I get to see, you know, Eric Kripke's doing The Boys now. Mm-hmm. So he's bringing all these people back in to be on The Boys and everything. And seeing Jensen Ackles play Soldier Boy, it's like, I imagine these are the things that were said by Dean whenever the cameras weren't recording.
I still haven't watched The Boys. I don't even know if I read more than the first couple issues of the comic. I just haven't watched. I don't know. It's just one of those ones that like I just didn't watch, so I just haven't watched it. You know?
Right.
I'm told it's excellent.
It is,
and I like that one dude who looks like Mitch Jarrett's, the main actor. What's his face?
I have to look it up.
Anyways, it doesn't matter. Yeah, I've heard it's good. I just haven't watched it. I do know. I think like, I wonder if our company. No, I don't think we were in the running to do the animation, to do the animated episodes. I think maybe I just knew some people that worked on it. But yeah.
Okay.
Well, another go to that I'll watch a lot of is the first 3 seasons of Alias.
Okay.
That one, and then there's a pretty drop off on seasons 4 and 5, but those first 3 seasons I feel like are kind of like great overarching storytelling and character work.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then lately I've been, my rewatch right now has been Ozark.
I haven't watched that one.
I love the shit out of it. It's just, it's dark. It's, you know, full of wholly irredeemable characters who make bad choice after bad choice. Yeah, that's I love that kind of thing anyways. So and also it's just, it's so well written and it's just so well like directed and shot. Like it's just a, you know, it's a good show.
Well, with you being such a big fan of that style of, you know, the dramas and things, it makes sense that you did so much work with CW. You know,
yeah, I was a fan of well, and I that's one of those things where like it's kind of a funny story. Like I was a fan of Vampire Diaries and I was you know, watching it as they came out. And then I was at a bar in Atlanta and I and ended up running into a woman and we got to talking about, she's like, oh, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I'm a storyboard artist. She's like, oh, shut the front door. So she goes and gets her friend that's with her, and her friend comes up. She's like, you're a storyboard artist? She's like, yeah, I'm a producer on the Vampire Diaries. I need you.
Oh. You know?
And so that was at the end of season 5. So I didn't work on season 5, but they got me on for season 6, and I worked through the end of the show, like season 6 through 8.
Yeah.
I became their, I think they may have used one or two other people every so often, but I boarded like, feels like every other episode, you know? I was working, you know, as I would often finish, and this is all while working full time on Archer. Like I just made it work. You know, so
busy guy, man.
Yeah, for a couple of years there, I was working like, well, through Vampire Diaries, which then that production company made the pitch pilot for Black Lightning, and that production company didn't end up making Black Lightning. Another production company did, but the show creator Salim Akil liked me, and so he kept me on, and I worked on seasons 1 and 2 of Black Lightning, and then I got busy with directing at the animation studio. So by the time I wasn't looking to take on more work. So unfortunately they had other people anyways that they liked. So,
right.
But I did work on, and Legacies was made by a lot of the same people who made Vampire Diaries. So that's how I did Legacy stuff. Dynasty was also made by a bunch of people who had worked on Vampire Diaries. So I worked on Dynasty. So yeah. And not doing a lot of either Legacies or Dynasty, but doing enough. And like, there's like some iconic part from the 80s where like a lady gets either shot or falls off. I think she just falls off her horse that like they were recreating. So I remember having to do that. And like I went onto the set, like they had a set where they had rebuilt like the interior of the mansion, and like it's inside a warehouse. So you walk into this warehouse and then you walk through all this like lumber and shit. And then, oh, you're standing in this grand foyer with this massive staircase, circle staircase and all this other stuff. So but Black Lightning was a lot of fun because like working on, especially on the pitch pilot, you know, they didn't know what the show was going to be yet, so they were trying to figure it out, and they liked that my boards had like a comic book feel to it. You know, so they really kind of gave me a lot of leeway to figure some stuff out, and I got to go to rehearsals with the fight choreographers, you know, not only in the rehearsal space but also on set. And then I got to watch the actors kind of get rigged up and, you know, start to figure out who their character was and who out their fighting styles were and stuff like that.
Nice.
Cress Williams, I got to say, he's the dude who's playing Black Lightning. He is genuinely one of the most, he was one of the nicest people I met. He was always very kind, always was like said hi, you know, like, how are you doing? Like that sort of thing. I didn't get to meet him too often, but the couple times I did, he was always very generous with his time. So
that's cool. Yeah. So we're kind of coming up close on a close here and everything. And I've just got a few more questions here for you.
Yeah, of course. I'm here.
If you had to recommend one piece of your work to kind of get a feel for what you do, what would you recommend?
Two answers, because there's the in-print answer and there's the findable answer and there's the not findable answer. The not findable answer would be Suicide Sisters Volume 1. It's mostly just because it's out of print right now. I'm working on, you know, what the plans are for doing a reprint. The more findable answer I would say would be, and it's going to be a tie, but either Gearhead or Lovestruck. Both of those are with writer Dennis Hopeless. Gearhead was our first book. Very dramatically different style than what I do now, but it's competent, and I think it's fun. Like, it's about a girl named Shelby. She beats people up with a wrench. The larger line is that her father was a superhero who died under mysterious circumstances, and she goes after the people that did it, who just happen to be other superheroes who are also running the government. So it's kind of a, you know, that sort of thing. And then Love Struck is about a girl named Callie who she's a punk rock photographer and she's jaded, doesn't believe in love and doesn't believe that she can find love. And then she gets gifted the ability to make people fall in love and goes to work for Cupid.
Huh. Okay. I like that.
Yeah. And that one is directly me and Dennis just like writing all of our influences of Veronica Mars. Mine, he was less so into Buffy, I was. Yeah. But we both love Veronica Mars. We both love Dead Like Me, you know, stuff like that. So there was a lot of like channeling that stuff. It's, you know, it's we're in our mid-20s. We don't know what the fuck we're doing, but they're fun books, you know? Yeah.
All right. Do you have any advice for maybe a young artist who's looking to further their craft?
Sure. Finish it and then move on to the next one.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, I'll elaborate, but really it just comes down to whatever the thing is on your desk right now, finish it, finish it tonight, finish it today, whatever, start a new one tomorrow. You know, I mean, and obviously the time is subjective, but one of the best things that I drilled into my head and got drilled into my head was there's, you know, if you finish a page and you think it sucks, that's fine. Draw the next one. It's going to be better. And then at the end, you're going to be like, well, that one sucked. And then draw the next one. And then by you know, 30 days in, you've got an issue of a comic book that you can look back and be like, oh, well, that's not as bad as I thought it was. And then you do it all again, go through the same process. And that's and just repeat that ad nauseum for however long you want comics to be in your life, you know?
Yeah.
Or illustrating, or, you know, it's like it goes the same with writing songs. You know, I've written thousands upon thousands of songs over my lifetime. And, you know, it's like there's a couple that I think stand out as being genuinely good. And then like there's some that I'm like, well, that's very poor. And I remember why they were, you know what I mean? And then there's a lot that I'm like, these are fine. These are good. You know, they're fine. You know, so.
Yeah, I could actually relate to that. Even doing this, you know, having certain episodes where I was like, ah, that wasn't what I wanted it to be. And then by the time I get around to the editing process for it, I'm like, you know what? That actually turned out really good.
Yeah. And it's something to just be mindful of yourself, like the royal you, not you specifically, but something to be mindful in ourselves is that, you know, we're always harshest while we're in the moment because we go into these things. When you start a blank page or when you, you know, when you hit record on a podcast, unfortunately, there's an expectation of the end product being something awesome.
Right.
And we need to, the royal we, need to diminish that expectation as much as possible. If it's not able to be eliminated completely, it needs to be tamped down and stamped out and sent to the corner like the bad child it is. It is not something to be paid attention to, you know?
Right.
And it's unfortunate because that expectation ruined so many of our personal achievements. It ruins a lot of professional achievements.
Yeah.
It ruins a lot of personal professional interactions because we and I think you understand this, but like, you know, it's like this is where imposter syndrome comes in, is because we never allow ourselves to experience the act of creativity from a place with no expectation.
Yeah.
And so always let down, and we always feel like we're letting others down, and it's fucking awful and we need to knock it off. So you know,
so hard. I'm though speaking
just as much to myself, so
yeah
so it is. It's I don't know where it comes from. I don't know if it's a societal thing. I don't know if it's just something that happens. The gift of these abilities is also brings the yang to its yin. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Or that is just the price that we have to pay.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, that's for higher powers than me to say, but I just know that when I'm functioning well, it is when I have minimized that aspect of my personality and I'm always fighting that, you know.
Well, I don't know how many times I've had like Nick, we were talking about him, he's you know, the guy over Original Geek, and I've had him on here numerous amounts of times, and he would be like, hey man, that episode was great, you know. I'd be like, really? And then I would like be like, I thought it was, you know, bad because of this and this, you know. And nobody else is noticing this stuff except for me.
Nobody ever will. That's the thing. Like, to get back to kind of make it relate to music, one of my least favorite things that bands do and musicians do and stuff like that is they denigrate their older work publicly. And I think that's I can't obviously force anybody to not do that.
Right.
But I I wish they would stop, because there are going to be someone, if not multiple someones, who that is their favorite thing and it saved their fucking life. So
yeah,
I'm happy to recommend my older work to people, because I know there's something there that's relatable and something that's energetic and cathartic, even if I've moved past that moment in time.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's not new for someone else, and it doesn't mean that someone else can't enjoy it, you know?
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Do you have any things that are coming up that maybe you want to talk about?
Nothing that's finished, you know. I mean, obviously you can honestly just go to kevinmellon.com and just look for updates there. I'm working on, I'm like everybody else. There's a Patreon that I try to keep updated. There's a Substack that it's all the same content. So you just pick your poison as to which one you want to join.
Yeah.
And then I update the blog, but it's all, working on new music videos, working on new comics, and working on, new short films and stuff like that. So
yeah,
nothing that has concrete release dates.
Would you say that's the best place to follow you, or where you at on
all
socials?
And all the socials that matter are linked there. So
okay,
all right. Or I say that matter for like following me. You might have ones that matter to you that I'm just not on, but and I'm on all the main ones. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, and all that. So
I just found Blue Sky actually.
Yeah,
I didn't even know it was a thing. And
yeah, I was pretty early in the beta, and I enjoy it because the interface and the level of interaction, style of interaction, is very much like Twitter circa like 2010 or something like that, you know, 2008 to 2010.
Right.
Which a lot of people are frustrated by because they want all these fancy bells and whistles that all these other things have. And I'm like, I think sometimes not having the ability to post GIFs is better.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm all for stripping that stuff down, but also the thing that gets me is like there's option paralysis. There's just too many places to post. Like the best time that I was posting to social media for me, like when I was having the best time, was when I was using IFTTT. Like it's a service if this then that. So it's like I would set up these things where these commands essentially, where it's like, if you post to Twitter, it will then repost it to Instagram and Facebook for you.
It
basically automated all this posting. So I could post something once and then it just goes to like five other places. But because all these social media things don't want you to leave their apps, they all change their API so often that it makes services like that really hard to use. So like Twitter, you can't automate anything to,
right?
You know, so in Facebook, you can really only automate into Instagram, and I don't. There's no way anybody's going to get me to use Threads. So,
well, and you, it's not integrated. Threads isn't part of that, because I use the Meta Business Suite to schedule all my posts for Facebook and for Instagram. But then I have to go and manually put my one in Threads. It doesn't allow you to do that. So
yeah, even if I wanted to use it, that would turn me off of it, because I set up so much stuff to where I'm posting on Instagram and then it goes to Facebook and Twitter and all that, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Or well, I guess not Twitter anymore, but yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I don't post as much on Twitter anymore anyways. I was good and was off there for quite a bit from when the idiot took over running it. Sorry for those of you that like him. I'm not a fan. Has nothing to do with his politics. I just think he's a moron. But there are it's weird, the funny people who argue, like, he's so smart. And I'm like, okay, show me. But I just, you know, and then I've been back there a little bit, basically because of some of the promotion stuff that I need to just kind of have in that place, you know? So it's just more, I just have dialed back and also just as a good rule of thumb, I've just dialed back my social media interaction. The thing I need to dial back even more is how much I'm looking at it. So,
yeah, no, I get that. The one that I get caught up in the most probably is TikTok for me now.
And, I've had that. I resisted downloading TikTok until I got into, like, I was like, okay, if I'm going to promote some stuff, both art wise and music wise, I'll get it. And then it was the dumbest thing. I should never have put it on my phone.
So, yeah. And it's funny. Like you said, you know, you use it for like advertising and things. Most of my social media is just for this.
Yeah.
You know, I think I have a personal Facebook and a personal Instagram. Beyond that, everything is for the podcast. You know,
I mean, that's a smart way to go, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and the dumb thing is like, I have a music account on Twitter that I never use, because I just do everything through my main, you know, @KMellon account.
Yeah.
But then I have like, the art of page on Facebook and then my personal page on Facebook. And like the only difference being like, I don't accept friend requests on my personal page of someone who I have not met, you know?
Gotcha.
What I mean?
Gotcha. Yeah.
Or like anybody can go follow the art page. I don't care. Personal page is like all about, like I've gone through several cullings over the years where I'm like, I don't know who these people are. Get them out of here. You know? And I think it's just it keeps the things much healthier.
Yeah.
Another part of it is also, I'm sorry, friends who are listening to this, but I've probably unfollowed you on Facebook and we're still friends, but I don't see your posts because it just, and it has nothing to do with them. They could be Facebooking the Brothers Karamazov, like the modern, you know, amazing version of that or something. And I wouldn't know.
Right.
So I have just dialed down on the noise, you know?
Yeah.
Same thing with Twitter and Blue Sky a little bit less because it's new and not quite as annoying yet, but with recent comics goings on, it's getting annoying, so I'm gonna have to go through and either start unfollowing or just muting people and just be like, all right, we can stay friends here, ? But I'm just gonna choose not to see what you have to say. So
it'll get it. I've had to learn how to do that, you know, because I'd have people that would post stuff that, you know, maybe kind of annoyed me a little bit.
Sure.
And so I had to learn how to be like, you know what, I don't want to see this. So
it is public spaces, quote unquote, and I support their right to believe and post what they want.
Exactly.
The thing that I wish more people would do is I do not have to interact with it, and I do not have to interact with them, so I just don't, you know.
100%.
Like I try not to give air to anybody that interacts with something that I've said, and I try, you know, if I disagree with something they're saying, unless I feel it, and this almost never happens in case of my feeds, but if someone is saying that I feel is harmful to themselves or to others, like, but like in a mortal way, you know,
yeah exactly,
then I think that's important. But otherwise,
definitely, yeah,
you know, otherwise my thoughts on Elon are not important for the world at all. I can, you know,
yeah,
you know, so, yeah.
All right, Kevin. Well, it has been great talking to you tonight on here.
I really appreciate it. I appreciate the space to just have a casual, if meandering on my part, conversation. So
it's perfect. That's the way I like it. I call it a podcast about nothing where interesting people talk. So, you know, this was perfect. I really enjoyed it. And hopefully I can get you to come back on because, I mean, there's still quite a bit of stuff that we haven't got to talk about.
Yeah, I would be happy to. I'm sorry, I forgot his name already, so you can cut this out if you want, or you can tell him, hey, he specifically didn't remember name. But who's the guy that I asked about the Kickstarter stuff?
Nick,
thank you. Yeah. If anything, like, shit might be interesting to have a conversation where it's like I just pick his brain in public about that kind of stuff, you know.
That'd be great. He actually told me, because that's who I was talking to right before I got on here with you, and he told me to tell you that he said hi. So
that's awesome. I feel like even more of a jackass for not remembering his name.
It's fine, man.
I wish it was an age thing or a drugs thing or whatever, but I've always been bad at names, and it just takes me several times, like, of meeting someone and being around them to like really latch onto a name, and I don't know where that is. So I'm sure
that's all good. Yeah.
But, yeah.
All right, man. Well, like I said, thank you for being on here.
Yeah, thank you.
I will talk to you more after we end the recording.
Yep.
But have a good night, and I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks a lot.
Wrestling fans, join us for the Diamond State Flawless TV recordings live in front of a studio audience. Every 2 weeks, join us in the Diamond Dome for the best live independent wrestling. Diamond State Wrestling is on the road to crowning the second annual King and Queen of Diamonds. You never know what's going to happen or what you'll see in Diamond State Wrestling. The show is called Flawless. It's every other Sunday at the Diamond Dome in Springdale, Arkansas, in the Next Level Soccer Center. Doors open at 3 o'clock with bell time at 4. Tickets start at $10 for general admission and $5 for children. For more information, check out DiamondStateWrestling.com.
Who dis?
Hey, is this Jim?
Maybe.
Oh, great. I'm Billy. I've been trying to contact you for weeks about your podcast extended warranty.
Oh, no, not again.
But listen, I got some great deals about the Zero to Hero podcast. Do you have a minute to listen?
Can I take a phone survey afterwards and, you know, just put negative reviews?
Yeah, no. But listen here. We range from 90s Power Rangers, 90s nostalgia, giant robots, interrogating cosplayers, maybe even moon landing. But you gotta listen in each week to find out what kind of shenanigans and numbskullery we get into with us or our guest of the week.
Can I hang up now?
Yeah, there's gonna be a phone survey in about 15 minutes, all
right? You're gonna call back, right?
No, not me. It's an automated message.
Okay. Tired of dang stupid spam calls in the middle of dinner.
Hey, listeners. I'm glad you're enjoying what you're listening to. I'm Billy from Zero to Hero Podcast. I'll always be joined by Jim. And me and him are the Folk and Skull Podcasting. Definitely, if you love what you're listening to, then come swing on by Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere that you find your podcast, we'll be there too.
All right, everybody. Hope that you enjoyed that episode with Kevin Mellon. He was amazing to have on the show. I really had a great time talking to him, and I look forward to having him back on the show in the future. And I just want to say thank you to Kevin for being on here, taking time out of his busy schedule to come on here and just chat with me about all kinds of nothing and having a really cool conversation. So as you're waiting for the next episode to drop, make sure that you check out my podcast networks that I'm a part of, the OIW Podcast Network, the Zio to Hero Podcast Network, and the Avenue Podcast Network. All of them have amazing stuff on them, and while you're waiting for another episode here to come out, go and check them guys out and show them some love. I also have merch out, and if you want any of that, just make sure you hit me up for that. I've got t-shirts, I've got hoodies, I've got stickers, I've got all kinds of stuff. So yeah, just make sure that you get with me, tell me what size you want, and tell me where to ship it, and we will get that worked out. So if you like the way my ending theme song sounds on this show, when I say, I love you and I'll see you next week, that's D-Cure. D-Cure creates all kinds of amazing music. Make sure that you go out there and follow him. If you like the way that sounds, he is actually working on a new album right now. I think he is on the letter O. He's coming out with one with from every letter of the alphabet, so this is really cool. And they each have these unique songs on them. And they're all amazing. The way I found D-Cure was he was a TikToker as well. And yeah, we got to talking and I just had him on the show. And then a few months later, he made me this ending theme song. So thank you to him for making that for me. So a lot of cool things are coming up, especially when it comes to live events. As you know, I have become a part of Original Geek. I am working with them, going to different cons with them. I have my first live guest appearance that I'm going to be doing in Paris, Texas. As you're listening to this, it has just happened. And the next week's episode, I will talk about everything that went on with that and give you guys an update with that, the cool stuff that I got to see. Bunch of cool people are going to be there, and I'm really excited about it. And I hope that some of you that are listening to this right now got to come out and maybe talk to me, say hi. I would love to meet some of you people because I think that'd be really cool to do. But I've got some other events coming up as well. I am going to be at Metrotham Con in Chattanooga, Tennessee in May. Try to come out to that. We're going to have a pretty good sized booth there. And I believe that we're going to be doing a few panels as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun and I'm excited to be a part of that. We also have some other events that are going to be coming up here soon. So make sure that you stay tuned for all the things that are coming up. We have a new comic that is coming out and that is Vengeance Issue 3. And this will conclude the Dawning arc of Vengeance. So you will finish that storyline, and we'll be moving on to something new eventually with that. But make sure that you get issue 3. The pre-orders are available now on originalgeekcomics.com, so make sure that you go out there and get that. I'll have a link to that in my show notes. So as you know, I have a couple projects that are going on right now. I'm staying a very busy guy, but I have branched out to If You Give a Dad a Brand, having two new people that have come on board. As you already know, Ty is a part of this, and he runs If You Give a Dad a YouTube channel. And now there is CosplayDude637, who runs If You Give a Dad a Cosplay. They both have really cool content, unique to both of their what they're trying to do. One teaches you how to edit videos. The other one teaches you about cosplay. They're both going to be talking to different people, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I have links to both of their YouTube channels in my show notes. Make sure that you go out there and follow these guys as well. They have brought these ideas to me, and we've been able to bring them to life, and I'm very excited to have them to be a part of the If You Give a Dad a Brand. So, yeah, follow them, guys, and show them some love. So as I'm talking, you hear me say stuff about social media and things like that. So if you're wanting to follow me on social media, there's a couple easy ways that you can do that. The first one would be is go to whichever social media site that you're trying to find me on and just look me up in the search bar. Look up If You Give a Dad a Podcast. You should be able to find me. You can also Google If You Give a Dad a Podcast, and I should be the first 10 to 15 results that you find on there as well. Or if you want to just go to my show notes here, I will have my link tree at the very bottom of the show notes, and you can find all of my socials in my link tree. They will be tagged at the very top of the link tree there. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to giveadadapodcast@gmail.com. Or you can find it in my link tree also. Or most of my social media sites have my email address tagged on there. If you want to order merch, or if you want to send me a line and tell me, hey, I love your podcast. Or if you want to say, hey, I think your podcast sucks. Whatever it is, just send me a line. I love hearing from you guys, and I love getting ideas from you. If you have a dad joke that you would like me to tell on the air, because, you know, at the end of this, I always do a dad joke, then send it to me. Send it to me in email, send it to me on social media or something, and I will get it on here as well. But I do need you to do me one small favor. Since I have you here at this moment, can you do me just this little favor? Go out and rate and review this podcast. Let me know what you think. And the more people that do that, the more likely I am to be recommended to more people. And I would just love to see this podcast grow. Also, make sure that you like, share this one to all of your friends, all of your enemies, everybody, and subscribe to the podcast. Wherever you're listening, hit the notification bell. That way you are notified when a new episode of iGadap drops. So with saying all that, we are at the end of this week's episode, and it is time for Billy's favorite part of the episode, and that is Dad Joke of the Week. If a pig loses its voice, does it become disgruntled?
So what do you think of that dad joke, Billy? Well,
they're pretty bad. I don't know where he gets these dad jokes from, but the government needs to disable that website, because sometimes they're just, they make my head hurt.
Did you just stroke out?
Let me press my life alert button.
All right. I love you guys. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I will see you next time. Bye.
On. He calls us beautiful people, then tells us who we have on. The best part of my day, though we're blocked out in my pods. Tell my friends all about it so that they follow along. And the host is kinda nerdy, but guess what, I am as well. I don't feel so alone, and I began walking out of my shell. Heard a story, I need a connection I haven't felt. I'll be looking for the next one, tell then farewell.
It's the podcast for me. Have it on, better go see. Listen closely, download and tune in remotely. It's the podcast for me. Have it on, better go see. And listen closely, download and tune in remotely.
This podcast is part of the OIW Podcasting Network.
Wait, 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 wait.
Can you put a timer up here?